Well, welcome back to the afternoon session of German Days at the SEM. In this section, we're going to tackle a daunting issue that concerns not just Germany, but all of Europe. And it is the issue of, on the one hand, declining birth rates in Germany and in other parts of Europe. On the other hand, the influx of Muslim immigrants. You have, 3.5 million in Germany. You have almost 10% of the French population are Muslims now. And will Germany, given the declining birth rates, is there a threat that Germany in a few decades might be an Islamic or Islamist society? Do we have to see the half moon on Cologne Cathedral or the Thomaskirche in Leipzig or Schlosskirche in Wittenberg? Will there be beheadings after church on Friday, stoning of adulteresses and that sort of thing, or not? And the man to enlighten us on this, couldn't have a more qualified man, is the Reverend Albrecht Hauser, who's a Kirchenrat, that translates into canon, probably in English, in the Württemberg Lutheran Church. He's retired as emeritus. He's a former missionary to Islamic countries such as Pakistan and Afghanistan. And, of course, Reverend Hauser is also the vice president of the Islam Institute of the Evangelical Alliance of Germany. Reverend Hauser, I welcome you to station time. Thanks very much for coming over from Stuttgart. Thank you.
Dr. Uwis Simonetto, thank you for your kind introduction and for your kind invitation. The longer I am involved with this whole subject of Islam, the less I would consider myself an expert. And this subject which was given to me today, Germany's future, an Islamic Republic, when we discussed it on the phone, I said, can't you have a more simple subject, because it almost suggests already something. I try to address this subject. Life is not just Islam. In Christ, the fullness of life has come. These thoughts came to me one early morning while waking up, because in the evening I was checking the internet with a lot of news on the subject of Islam, and it certainly can be disturbing. When I speak as a Christian about Islam, I want to make clear from the beginning that I do clearly differentiate between a Muslim as an individual, fellow human being and person, and Islam as a faith system. My life has been enriched and challenged by the encounter with many Muslims over the years. Yet I have also grown more critical that in Islam we face a belief system which in its very core is diametrically opposed to the central faith tenets of the gospel. In dealing with Islam, as with any other religions, however, we have to realize that faith is not only an individual belief, but that there is also a corporate community of faith in which not every individual may share all aspects of the total. The majority of Muslims is peaceful in spite of Islam, not because of Islam. In every culture, there are people who want to live and let live. Since deep in us, we all realize that we first belong to the human family and secondly, we are religious people. Therefore, it holds true for all humans what once Amiel said, and I quote, "If your religion injures your intelligence, it is bad. If your religion injures your character, it is vicious. If your religion injures your conscience, it is criminal." Europe, a continent with many suppressed historical traumas, is forced to take a fresh look at Islam, not anymore as an academic exercise confined to the classroom of universities and colleges, but in daily rubbing shoulders with people who are first not just representative of a post-Christian religion, but firstly human beings, vulnerable persons with common needs, hopes, and anxieties. For the Christian, this challenge comes at a time when many traditional values have been undermined by materialism and secularism, and where new religious movements find an inroad not only amongst younger generations, but older ones as well. And this new situation of Islam in Europe forces the church to develop a biblical and Christian theology of religions on the one hand, and to work out patterns of behavior which makes our witness authentically Christian. When dealing with Islam, I have always tried to recognize three things: to be scholarly accurate, to be compassionate with people, and to be absolutely true to Jesus Christ. However, Islam is not just a religion. Islam is a total life design and an all of society encompassing ideology. In its classical expression, it is a unity of faith and state, of theology and politics, of economics and jurisprudence and spirituality. Islam is a faith and belief system which considers itself as a final and all other religions superseding revelation, as stated recently by a committee of Orthodox Muslims scholars in Saudi Arabia. And I quote, "One of the fundamentals of faith in Islam, which is known as the essential part of the religion and upon which all Muslims have agreed, is that there is no true religion on the earth except Islam, and that it is the final religion which abrogated all previous religions and creeds. Therefore, no other religion remains on earth by which Allah can be worshipped except Islam." The nature and face or ethos of a religion is not recognized where that religion is a minority trying to get accepted, but rather where that religion is a majority and has a saying in how it deals with minority in countries where, for example, Islam is ruling the day-to-day life of a society. And in that case, I can assure you, Islam is not so kind to those who don't belong to their fold. In fact, in the present day of development of Islam, there is a tremendous inter-Islamic tension as well, where by declaring somebody takfir, Not being quiet in the line, they can even amongst one another call others unbelievers, let alone those who don't belong to Islam. Islam poses at the turn of this century one of the greatest challenges to the global church and society. It is both a theological as well as a political religion. And Islam is a theological, a spiritual, a missiological as well as a political and ideological challenge to church and society. Islam forces us to know why we are Christians and why we want joyfully to remain Christians in spite of Islam. Yes, why we even are happy when a Muslim encounters Jesus Christ as he truly is, since everyone who meets Jesus Christ as he truly is cannot but see in him the one truly human, truly divine, the incarnate Lord and Savior of mankind. As citizens in a civil and liberal society, we also need to give an answer why we are not only happy, but also insist that there should be and needs to be a separation between state and religion. And why we insist on religious freedom, human rights, and we are glad to have democratic, civil, secular governments. This articulation is needed since in Islam, the very religious neutrality is challenged, and Islam tries to get a civil government eventually to issue Sharia-conform space and laws. Under the claim and demand for religious freedom, we have to face an ideology which through democratic mechanisms challenges the fundamental freedoms which we took generations to establish ourselves. All religious and political ideologies tend to cloud and hide their long-range objectives. They try to prevent critical thinking and questioning, and they use fear in order to intimidate those who might be critical. Islam is a spiritual movement which throughout history has had a rather strangulating effect on the Christian church. There has been much oppression and suffering since Islam considers Christians to have gone astray, and since Islam also, as we have already heard, rejects any equality of the so-called three Abrahamitic monotheistic faith, namely Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Islam considers the central beliefs of Christians to be obsolete. Theologically, the whole concept of incarnation, the vicarious death of Christ and his redemptive death on the cross, is rejected in Islamic scholarship as well as by the bulk of believers. So also the Trinitarian understanding of God is considered blasphemous. It is claimed that the Apostle Paul and Athanasius of Alexandria have adopted these ideas from pagan sources. In Islam, we encounter all the Christological challenges of old as if early church history would meet us afresh. Islam therefore forces the church to take its Christology again very serious. The late professor Johann Baumann of Marburg considered the challenge of Islam to the church today a greater one than the Gnostic challenge to the early church was. In Islam, the cross is veiled and denied, and the concept of God in Christ is rejected. And Islamic eschatology makes Christ finally the destroyer of Christianity. The challenge for the Christian church is to understand basic Islamic thinking. We should not project into Islam our wishful thinking, but recognize how Islam defines itself. And then joyfully confess Jesus as truly God and truly man. With other words, in encountering Islam, we should not be tempted to re-edit our own faith in order to accommodate good relations with Muslims. My paper is a little bit longer than I have, and therefore I am not using the whole paper. In Western Europe, approximately 15 million Muslims do live. Being of various backgrounds and nationality, and quite a few having gained the citizenship of their adopted countries. In all of Europe, including the Balkan and the European part of Russia, there are approximately 50 million Muslims, half of them in former Russia. The influx of significant numbers of Muslims in Western Europe from the middle of the 1950s onward happens at a time when an element of restless resurgence of fundamentalistic Islam forces even liberal-minded Europeans to realize that the presence of Muslims in Europe should not be seen isolated from what is happening in the rest of the Islamic world. And they should look afresh at the underlying assumptions of multiculturalism. Muslim diplomats and members of international agencies are found in all capitals of Europe, taking deep interest and playing a significant support role to strengthen Islamic interests in Europe. Students from Islamic countries are found in almost every university. Many of them are highly motivated Muslim activists, joining with resident Muslim students. They are well organized and normally tend to be rather linked to political Islam. Often they are involved in the politics of their home countries and are relating to Islamic networks globally well connected through the internet. Back already in 1980, the Islamic Council of Europe laid out a strategy how to Islamize Europe. And I quote, "Once a community is well organized, its leaders should strive to seek the recognition of Muslims as a religious community having its own characteristics by the authorities. Once recognized, the community should continue to request the same rights the other religious communities enjoy in the country. Eventually, the community may seek to gain political rights as a constituent community of the nation. Once these rights are obtained, then the community should seek to generalize its own characteristics to the entire nation." Germany has, by a population of 83 million, approximately 3.2 million Muslims. As many as 2.7 million are coming from Turkey, and many have come as temporary migrant workers in the 70s. Some years later, dependent families joined them, as well as there is a steady stream of brides and bridegrooms coming from Turkey to join and live in Germany. Although many of them are already more than 35 years in the country, yet they still experience themselves by and large as a disadvantaged minority, while some doing very well and have established a flourishing second market with many shops and small industries, and yet there is also a high percentage of unemployment amongst migrant workers and the educational level is lower. Many of the migrant children do not know enough German when they reach school age, and the government has been trying to launch language courses to assist integration, yet by and large, the integration is a problem. I come later to it. Over the last few years, as many as 159 purpose-built mosques have been erected, while there are as many as 2,600 Islamic prayer halls. Some of them are remodeled factory halls. Further, 184 mosques are in planning, some of them rather big and representative, so that in some places, like in Cologne, Berlin and Munich, public controversy has erupted as to the size and place and number of minarets. People like Ralph Giordano, a Holocaust survivor and author of books and essays, has recently challenged the Muslim community, stating that the mosques are not facilitating integration, but rather consolidate segregation. And some secular ex-Muslims have joined the discussion, articulating that organized Islam is preventing true integration and is undermining the liberal democratic fabric of our nation. Critics have been blamed of Islamophobia, and some have even received death threats from Islamists. The both Catholic and Protestant church leadership starts to take a fresh look at the current dialogue practices and have questioned the sincerity of Muslim opinion shapers, to what extent they really are irrevocably loyal to a secular government. There was a lot of outcry with local and international lobbying when my own state in Baden-Württemberg introduced in the year 2005 some questions for those migrants who want to obtain German citizenship in order to determine to what extent they understand the rules governing life in a secular state and to what extent the applicant is accepting the basic constitution of our country. Most of the mosques and prayer places in Germany align themselves to Islamic umbrella organizations. The largest umbrella organization and body is known as DITIB, which is linked to the official state-controlled Islam in Turkey. And they control presently 765 mosques. And the DITIB imams which come to these mosques, are sent to Germany from Turkey and are actually civil servants in Turkey. They are interlinked there to Diyanet, which is one of the, one could describe the institution governing religious affairs in Turkey. Now, the president of this institution, Bardak Oglu, has in October 2005 mentioned, while addressing some sheikhs from Africa, he mentioned that the criticism of Islam amounts to a serious threat to world peace. Whoever criticizes Islam is endangering world peace. The same gentleman, while addressing an EKD conference of religious liberty in Islam and Christianity back in September 2004 in Berlin, mentioned that the Ottoman Empire could be a model of religious liberty and human rights. Politely, I tried to challenge the statement and was surprised by the reaction of some theological colleagues, speaking as if Islam is an endangered species in need of Christian protection. So you can see what Islam does also within the church. Another umbrella organization in Germany is the Central Council of Islam, which claims to represent about 500 mosques, while Willi Kirish, a Turkic Islamist group, is also aligning about 500 mosques. At least this is their own claims. Both groups, the Central Council of Islam and Willi Kirish, are representing the more conservative and political Islam in Germany. There are also umbrella organizations, some of which with a stronger bend towards a conservative, orthodox, and Islamistic outlook, and some of them even under surveillance of the government. Under the pressure of the German government, some of the major umbrella organizations have organized themselves as the Coordination Council of Muslims in Germany and expect henceforth the federal government to soon grant them equal status to the churches and the Jewish community, which are recognized as cooperation under public law, Körperschaft öffentlichen Rechts, with special legal privileges and also responsibilities governed by law and conventions. These under society law registered Islamic organizations and charities do not yet meet the legal requirements for obtaining this privileged status, and they are sulking about this in their own publications. In the media and discussions, we can observe a lot of brinkmanship by Muslim opinion shapers trying to obtain more concessions and some accommodative laws from the government. Muslims try to gain some Sharia-conform concessions. Some legal verdicts recently have indicated that there is a tendency to be more lenient with Muslims when it comes to culturally related issues and crimes, even in the case of so-called honor killings and in divorce cases. However, there was a big press upheaval in March of this year when a judge in Frankfurt explained family violence by referring to the Quran and told a Muslim lady in a divorce case that having married a man from Morocco, she should have known that her husband has some right to discipline her. The judge quoted the Quran to strengthen her verdict that in spite of an obvious threat from her husband, she would have to wait for her time before the divorce case can be effective, The judge was withdrawn from the case, and a big discussion went on in the media that there can be only one law to govern the country and that Sharia should not slip in by the back door. Mosques and Muslim organizations try to convince the government that in family conflicts they could settle the matters better, introducing mediators without telling that the verdict then would be under Sharia court
it would be a Sharia court verdict without calling it publicly that name. The government has opened an official dialogue with organized Islam in Germany. The Ministry of Interior constituted and called a German conference on Islam, trying to get Muslim representatives, including some more secular Muslims, to negotiate and to commit themselves not only verbally to the German constitution, but also working towards an integration of Muslims living in Germany to fully accept a secular, democratic, and free society. Verbally, the spokesperson of organized Islam in Germany say that they are law-abiding, yet already within the Islamic bodies and in their publication, there is talk and complaint that the government is trying to enforce too many restrictions and conditions, pressuring them into a European version of Islam and thus corrupting Islam towards a so-called Euro-Islam. The headscarf, the hijab, of teachers has been a big legal issue. Also, the religious education of Muslims, Muslim children, and the exemption for girls, for example, in sports and swimming events of schools. There has, over the years, been a lot of church and society-related dialogue with organized Islam, and at times one could get the impression that quite a few dialogue representatives of the mainline churches are facilitated and were actually used by organized Islam towards integration, while in fact organized Islam is not interested in assimilating, but in integrating Islam in the liberal democratic society. So in a sense, the discussion is on integration and assimilation within the German community, whereas the Muslims would like to integrate Islam into the German society. So there has to be a little bit more careful listening what Muslims mean when they use their own vocabularies. And they certainly try to establish that Islam be accepted in Germany on equal footing with the church. My wife and I have been just recently in Pakistan, and in Lahore there was a visit of the Imam of the Kaaba of Mecca, and the leader of the Jamaat-e-Islami in Pakistan told the Imam from the Kaaba in Mecca that a high delegation of Muslims would be sent to Europe to meet the church representatives to tell them in what bad shape the Muslims in Germany are and in Europe, and to ask them to see that they are getting equal rights. And the same group in Pakistan has just placed a law into the assembly to make apostasy punishable by Sharia. So we have to look at things globally and not think we can create in our own countries a kind of religious biotope of equality and harmony. The world globalized is much more complex. There has over the years been this lot of this dialogue going on, but I think it has come now to a more realistic point, which I come immediately now to it. The tragic event of 9/11 was a partial wake-up for those who were dreaming for multicultural society in which all are celebrating diversity and accept a certain amount of cultural relativism. The prevailing anti-American attitudes among the liberal left added to the resistance to recognize that Islam is not just peace. As Islamic propaganda wants us to make to believe, and that Al-Qaeda and also Islamic terror networks are driven by jihad and the desire to make Islam the dominating ideology and religion of the 21st century. Part of the Dawah strategy, the Islamic mission and propaganda, is the Arabic word is Dawah. Part of this strategy of Islamic mission is not primarily to get as many converts as possible, but rather to instrumentalize structures and institutions of a given society in order to create more favorable conditions for an Islamic way of life. Therefore, it is part of the Dawah strategy to keep a society, including its media, its press, and the legal institutions, busy with an Islamic agenda. The Muslim opinion shapers are quite clever in turning even possible negative headlines into positive PR mileage. The legal proceedings for allowing school teachers as civil servants to wear the headscarf, the hijab, has to be seen as part of this Dawah strategy. The aim and stages of the Islamization of society are the creation of an Islamic consciousness, then the establishing and consolidation of Islamic institutions. Out of this flows strategic engagement in political and social structures. If my observation is correct, Muslim da'is, Muslim missionaries, have become more active in Dawah activities, appealing especially to young Germans about the superiority of Islam, inviting them to accept Islam as the only logical and true faith. Muslim websites, as well as email invitations to accept Islam, have increased. So also the Islamic literature in German and many propaganda video clips of Westerners embracing Islam. The figure how many Germans have become Muslims in the last decade varies from 20,000 to 100,000. Many of them are husbands or wives who married a Muslim partner. There has also been statistical propaganda by claiming that only last year the conversion rate has jumped four times higher, having reached 4,000 in 1 year. The truth is certainly less. Yet the claim that Islam is the fastest growing religion and that since 9/11 many more have become Muslims is a clever propaganda which certainly seems to bear fruit. We have a number of prominent Muslim converts who also engaged in writing and speaking on Islam in Germany and who are quite successful in getting more attention than their number as a minority would justify. The role of converts in terror plots and the indication that even German native converts have been in jihad training camps caused quite a concern for the government and public and is widely discussed in the media. Some years ago, a Muslim activist told me proudly that there are now 500,000 Muslims who have German nationality and who are eligible to vote. And he said, by this election, we will have more than 1 million. Islamic umbrella organizations have therefore increasingly engaged local and national parties in asking them to declare what they intend to do for their interests when it comes to the vote. It was told to me that, for example, in a local party in one of our towns in Baden-Württemberg, the party was very happy that they got 20 new members of migrant background, only to be told by the security department that they had accepted quite a number of Islamists. Dawah activities have the aim to create Islam-conform space, including eventual governmental concessions to regulate at least the family in civil affairs according to Islamic verdicts, thus also questioning the monopoly on legislation of a given secular civil government. In Islam, one thinks in territorial terms and considers mosques as almost extraterritorial sacred space. Very often one can read and hear that the Islamists have hijacked an otherwise peaceful religion. Yet I believe many conservative Muslims consider the Islamists to be rather the elite, as they themselves justifiedly define their thinking and actions from the Quran and the Islamic tradition. Politically correct attitudes in church and society have long prevented to raise realistic questions. Muslims engaged in dialogue, arguing masterfully, and know when and how to manipulate themselves into the victim role, trying to get away by calling any possible criticism to be racist or Islamophobia. Yet at the same time, they threaten that if we criticize Islam, they could not guarantee that there will be no violence. Organized Islam has so far applied clever brinkmanship in Christian-Muslim relations. In 1993, I have, for example, published on the request of our synod a document on the situation of Christians in Islamic countries. And we have asked at that time the Barnabas Fund Institute to help us in the publication of this document. While the bishop and our synod and the governing board of the church was very grateful for this documentation, it nevertheless, I received a lot of criticism and complaints that this could disturb the delicate Christian-Muslim dialogue and to have broken a taboo by it. And some argued that for the sake of good Christian-Muslim relations, we should accept a certain self-censorship in criticizing Islam. Since 9/11, we can see an increased willingness within the leadership of the established churches to address also critical issues in Christian-Muslim relations. Bishop Dr. Wolfgang Huber, the chair of the Council of the Evangelical Churches in Germany, the EKD, has been masterfully polite and yet quite outspoken in his relation to organized Islam in Germany. He mentioned many times that Muslims should not presume in being granted a legitimate right for difference, that they should also obtain separate governmental rights, and that the Christian belief of mutual respect between religions is by no means founded in religious indifference, but rather in conviction about faith, and that a relativist tolerance and fundamentalist absolutism has to be seen both incompatible with an honest dialogue between religions. Huber has challenged Muslims on many issues, including religious liberty and the persecution of Christians in Islamic countries, as well as on matters of theology and Islamic legal concepts, including the equality of men and women, the right to share the gospel with Muslims, and the need to accept the basic law and constitution unreservedly, thus accepting a secular constitution and society. The recently published EKD handbook, entitled Clarity and Good Neighborly Relations, which mentioned, and I quote, "The Christian mission, however, means more than just respectful encounter. This mission includes witness of the triune God who through Jesus Christ freed people to enter true humanity. For the Protestant Church, remaining silent on this testimony and not sharing it with the adherents of other religions is not an option." There was a lot, I could quote some more of this document, you can read it on internet yourself, it's translated into English. There was a lot of outcry and criticism from Muslim spokesperson. They saw in this paper a breakdown of dialogue relations and even boycotted in their brinkmanship a long agreed annual meeting with the EKD in February 2007. They were especially peeved over the clarity and the Christian mandate to share even the gospel with Muslims. And they considered the paper an evangelical takeover in the commission which wrote the paper. Unfortunately, quite many theologians involved in Christian-Muslim dialogue joined in the criticism and demonstrated that guilt is still a very useful tool for Muslims to use as an instrument to try to get what they want. And the Germans switch off their brain when it comes to guilt. It was good that Bishop Huber and the council of the EKD did not falter and cave in by this blatant manipulative attempts. The reaction to the EKD handbook and the discussion over it indicates that a new realism is emerging in Christian-Muslim relations. Organized Islam, too, is becoming more assertive and demanding. They, on the long run, aim to be major players in religious affairs and will keep us certainly busy with an Islamic agenda in Germany and Europe. The time factor and the demographic developments will assist in this, since by the year 2030, it is estimated to have approximately 10 million Muslims in Germany, comprising a rise from 3.6% at the present to roughly 10 to 12% of the population in 2030. It is unlikely that by then we will have a more liberal Euro-Islam determining the course, since a younger generation of Muslim migrants tend to be sympathizing more openly with radical Islam. Since Islam is inherently political and aims at political dominance, it is unlikely that it will not seek to influence a state to make some concession for the Sharia in these areas where Muslims mainly do live and will live, and to have at least some more say over their own affairs. The situation of Islam in Germany has, however, also to be seen within the European context and its institutions. It is the European Union which will eventually decide whether Turkey will join the European Union or not. Some argue that Turkey will have a moderating effect on Islam, but this seems to be wishful thinking, since already now we can see that Turkey is lobbying for more rights for Muslims within Western Europe. Turkey prides itself that they were able to insert Islamophobia in the Warsaw Declaration of the European Council in May 2005, which reads now in paragraph 9 as follows. "We strongly condemn all forms of intolerance and discrimination, in particular those based on sex, race, and religion, including antisemitism and Islamophobia. It is good that some parliamentarians have become aware that the consequences of such strategies, which eventually will endanger our democratic institutions, have to be challenged. The European Council for Fatwa and Research, a body known to be within the Global Muslim Brotherhood Network, called at their meeting in July 2006 on Muslims living in the West to abide by the laws of their respective countries and respect the rights of non-Muslims. It was stated, and I quote, "While abiding by the host country's laws, Muslims are also asked to form Islamic bodies to organize their personal issues in accordance with Sharia. Most importantly, this body commanded that Muslims in the West to spare no legal or peaceful effort to get the country where they live to recognize Islam as a religion and Muslims as a community that should enjoy full rights." Now, when we hear full rights, we say yes, but Muslims mean by full rights more than we mean by full rights. The recommendations also ask Muslims in the West to respect the lives and properties of non-Muslims, as if we would be already dhimmis. Muslims in the West, I quote, "Muslims in the West should observe all duties and provide a good example for others in word, action, and behavior," end of quotation. It is also encouraging Muslims in the West to adopt positive and innovative attitudes, and that they should do their utmost to raise the new generation, boys and girls, in a modern Islamic manner through establishing schools, educational entertainment centers, and to protect their young people from deviation, which means from getting secularized. Let's face it. They also called Muslim families living in the West to attempt and find practical situations, suitable solutions to such problems as to live in complete compliance with Sharia without violating the law of European countries. In Germany, we would say they are rediscovering the quadrature des Kreises. I don't know how to translate that one into English. Polite language is hiding here the massive suggestion and trend towards an Islamized parallel society. As Muslims tend to move into the areas where mosques have been established, we have already areas in some major cities where a high proportion of Muslims are living. The tension between the European culture and the Islamic way of life is keenly felt, especially by women and younger generations, some of them already second and third generation Muslims in Europe. They are exposed and caught between the secular education in public schools and their own cultural setting and norms at home. The relation between the older and younger generation is real, full of conflict, but there is also a trend towards radicalization in the younger generation. Even in Germany, 41% of the Muslims consider a conflict between our basic law and the Quran, and only 25% saw no conflict, while another 35% was not sure and did not answer the question. In Britain, 59% of Muslims would prefer to live under British law compared to 28% who would prefer to live under Sharia law. Now, 37% of the 16 to 24-year-old prefer Sharia law, whereas the older ones, 17%, who are above 55. So when they are older, they realize they still realize that Sharia is not as ideal for their individual freedom. This trend indicates that organized Islam is not assisting much in integrating the younger generation into a Western liberal society, but rather sparing no effort in establishing a separate Islamic identity. Organized Islam and its networks of Islamic umbrella organizations, many of them directly or indirectly related to the Muslim Brotherhood or other Islamistic networks, want to see Europe and the rest of the West to become Darul Islam, the House of Islam. They see to it through literature, the Islamic media, through cyberspace, the ideological battle for the heart and mind of Europe will continue. The trend towards segregation and establishing an Islamic way of life will continue. Organized Islam in Europe does not presently give up the hope to Islamize all of life. A secular Euro-Islam is still a dream for some who hope against hope. Yet it could also be an indication that to dream is rather more easy than to face hard realities politically, theologically, and spiritually. There are, however, also many Muslims puzzled by their own faith, and the inner Islamic tensions, where so many fellow Muslims are declared apostates, even when they are still actually Muslims, thus justifying inner Islamic violence tends to be on the increase. Unless Muslims are willing to look more critically at their own history and will be willing to accept a certain amount of secularization, the secular governments will have to face some tough decisions to maintain the monopoly on legislation and civil liberties in the future. In the course of this, the Christian Church also might lose its still existing privileges. We do not need a crystal ball to predict some rough times ahead. Unless the emerging global jihad trend are ideologically and militarily defeated in the next few years, we could face in Europe a balkanization of our society. The idea of a possible Islamic republic is a dream in the head of some Islamists. Yet I do think it is not fully realistic, unless achieved by violence. However, unless there is a willingness by Muslims to accept this certain amount of secularization and a willingness to state clearly which aspects of the Sharia are not any more relevant in the civil society of the 21st century, Islam will continue to challenge the future of Europe and the future of the West. In our globalized world, we have also to take into consideration what could happen to the Islamic world as a whole. Various scenarios are possible, not all predicting what wishful Islamic thinking holds, since in society as a whole, there is not only a death instinct operative, but also a desire to achieve sanity, and we do not know always where history is going. Bernhard Lewis predicted that Europe to be under Islam by the end of this century. That could be so. Yet, this possibility should challenge the church not to lose heart, nor to lose hope, nor to be paralyzed by fear, but to remain faithful to Christ in spite and because of Islam. Philip Jenkins speaks of Europe's Christian comeback and seems to be more optimistic. And I hope and pray that he's right. I'm not sure to what extent Islam will turn out to be a judgment for the church in Europe. I translated an African bishop, and he said, if you in Europe fail to share the gospel with Muslims, Islam will become a judgment on you as a church. We also, however, should not overlook a significant number of Muslims turning to Christ, not only in the West, where this freedom is possible, but even in Islamic countries, and the role they could play in making us aware what counts for life abundant. Yet at the same time, intimidation and even threat are experienced by Muslims who turn to Christ, and this issue is now often openly also addressed even in the secular press. Where is history in Europe going? Do we have a future? Yes, I would say, since despair is never an option. Truth can be costly, but it is still a liberating power in history, society, and one's personal life. I am convinced that to the extent we rediscover the Reformation reality of sola scriptura, sola gratia, sola fide, we will also be empowered to speak the truth in love and will even experience afresh the renewing power of the gospel and the reality of the drawing power of the cross. Some of us Christians would like in our days to translate the words of Jesus and the truth will set you free by and political correctness will set you free. Yet that was not the way how Jesus meant it. No situation has and will slip out of the hands of him who exhorts his disciples yesterday and today. In the world, you will face trouble and persecution, but take courage. I have conquered and overcome the world. Thanks for your patience.